just before the war with the Eskimos. 5 straight Saturday mornings, Ginny Mannix had played tennis at the East Side courts with Selena Graf, a classmate at Miss Basehors. Ginny openly considered Selena the biggest drip at Miss Basehors, a school ostensibly abounding with fair-sized drips. But at the same time, she had never known anyone like Selena for bringing fresh cans of tennis balls. Selena's father made them, or something. At dinner one night, for the edification of the entire Mannix family, Ginny had conjured up a vision of dinner over at the Grafs. It involved a perfect servant coming around to everyone's left with, instead of a glass of tomato juice, a can of tennis balls. But this business of dropping Selena off at her house after tennis and then getting stuck every single time for the whole cab fare was getting on Ginny's nerves. After all, taking the taxi home from the courts instead of the bus had been Selena's idea. On the 5th Saturday, however, as the cab started up north in York Avenue, Ginny suddenly spoke up. "Hey, Selena." "What?" asked Selena, who was busy feeling the floor of the cab with her hand. "I can't find the cover to my racket," she moaned. Despite the warm May weather, both girls were wearing top coats over their shorts. "You put it in your pocket," Ginny said. "Hey, listen." "Oh, God, you've saved my life." Listen, said Ginny, who wanted no part of Selena's gratitude. "What?" Ginny decided to come right out with it. The cab was nearly at Selena's street. "I don't feel like getting stuck for the whole cab fare again today," she said. "I'm no millionaire, you know." Selena looked first amazed, then hurt. "Don't I always pay half?" she asked innocently. "No," said Ginny flatly. "You paid half the first Saturday, way in the beginning of last month. And since then, not even once. I don't want to be ratty, but I'm actually existing on $4.50 a week. And out of that, I always bring the tennis balls, don't I?" Selena asked unpleasantly. Sometimes Ginny felt like killing Selena. "Your father makes them or something," she said. "They don't cost you anything. I have to pay for every single little..." all right," Selena said loudly and with finality enough to give herself the upper hand. Looking bored, she went through the pocket of her coat. "I only have 35 cents," she said coldly. "Is that enough?" "No. I'm sorry, but you owe me $1.65. I've been keeping track of every..." "I'll have to go upstairs and get it from my mother." "Can't it wait till Monday? I could bring it to the gym with me if that'd make you happy." Selena's attitude defied clemency. "No," Ginny said. "I have to go to the movies tonight. I need it." In hostile silence, the girls stared out of opposite windows until the cab pulled up in front of Selena's apartment house. Then Selena, who was seated nearest the curb, let herself out. Just barely leaving the cab door open, she walked briskly and obliviously, like visiting Hollywood royalty, into the building. Ginny, her face burning, paid the fare. She then collected her tennis things, racket, hand towel, and sun hat, and followed Selena. At 15, Ginny was about 5'9" in her 9B tennis shoes, and as she entered the lobby, her self-conscious rubber-soled awkwardness lent her a dangerous amateur quality. It made Selena prefer to watch the indicator dial over the elevator. "That makes $1.90 you owe me," Ginny said, striding up to the elevator. Selena turned. "It may just interest you to know," she said, "that my mother is very ill." "What's the matter with her?" "She virtually has pneumonia. And if you think I'm going to enjoy disturbing her just for money..." Selena delivered the incomplete sentence with all possible aplomb. Ginny was, in fact, slightly put off by this information, whether its degree of truth, but not to the point of sentimentality. "I didn't give it to her," she said, and followed Selena into the elevator. When Selena had rung her apartment bell, the girls were admitted, Or rather, the door was drawn in and left ajar by a colored maid with whom Selena didn't seem to be on speaking terms. Ginny dropped her tennis things on a chair in the foyer and followed Selena. In the living room, Selena turned and said, "Do you mind waiting here? I may have to wake Mother up and everything." "Okay," Ginny said, and plopped down on the sofa. "I never in my life would have thought you could be so small about anything," said Selena, who was just angry enough to use the word small, but not quite brave enough to emphasize it. "Now you know," said Ginny, and opened a copy of Vogue in front of her face. She kept it in this position till Selena had left the room, then put it back on top of the radio. She looked around the room, mentally rearranging furniture, throwing out table lamps, removing artificial flowers. In her opinion, it was an altogether hideous room. Expensive, but cheesy. Suddenly, a male voice shouted from another part of the apartment. "Eric, that you?" Ginny guessed it was Selena's brother, whom she had never seen. She crossed her long legs, arranged the hem of her polo coat over her knees, and waited. A young man wearing glasses and pajamas and no slippers lunged into the room with his mouth open. "Oh, I thought it was Eric, for Christ's sake," he said. Without stopping, and with extremely poor posture, he continued across the room, cradling something close to his narrow chest. He sat down on the vacant end of the sofa. "I just cut my goddamn finger," he said, rather wildly. He looked at Ginny as if he had expected her to be sitting there. "Ever cut your finger? Right down to the bone and all?" he asked. There was a real appeal in his noisy voice, as if Ginny, by her answer, could save him from some particularly isolating form of pioneering. Ginny stared at him. "Well, not right down to the bone," she said, "but I've cut myself." He was the funniest looking boy, or man, it was hard to tell which he was, she had ever seen. His hair was bed disheveled. He had a couple of days' growth of sparse blonde beard, and he looked, well, goofy. "How did you cut it?" she asked. He was staring down with his slack mouth ajar at his injured finger. "What?" he said. "How did you cut it?" "God damn if I know," he said, his inflection implying that the answer to that question was hopelessly obscure. "I was looking for something in the goddamn wastebasket, and it was full of razor blades." "You Selena's brother?" Ginny asked. "Yeah. Christ, I'm bleeding to death. Stick around. I may need a goddamn transfusion. Did you put anything on it?" Selena's brother carried his wound slightly forward from his chest and unveiled it for Ginny's benefit. "Just some goddamn toilet paper," he said. "Stops the bleeding. Like when you cut yourself shaving." He looked at Ginny again. "Who are you?" he asked. "Friend of the jerks?" "We're in the same class." "Yeah? What's your name?" "Virginia Mannix." "You Ginny?" he said, squinting at her through his glasses. "You Ginny Mannix?" "Yes," said Ginny, uncrossing her legs. Selena's brother turned back to his finger, obviously for him the true and only focal point in the room. "I know your sister," he said dispassionately. "Goddamn snob." Ginny arched her back. "Who is?" "You heard me. She is not a snob." "The hell she's not," said Selena's brother. "She is not." "The hell she's not. She's the queen. Queen of the goddamn snobs." Ginny watched him lift up and peer under the thick folds of toilet paper on his finger. "You don't even know my sister." "Hell I don't." "What's her name? What's her first name?" Ginny demanded. "Joan. Joan the snob." Ginny was silent. "What'd she look like?" she asked suddenly. No answer. "What'd she look like?" Ginny repeated. "If she was half as good looking as she thinks she is, she'd be goddamn lucky," Selena's brother said. This had the stature of an interesting answer, in Ginny's secret opinion. "I never heard her mention you," she said. "That worries me. That worries hell out of me." "Anyway, she's engaged," Ginny said, watching him. "She's going to be married next month." "Who to?" he asked, looking up. Ginny took full advantage of his having looked up. "Nobody you know." He resumed picking at his own first aid work. "I pity him," he said. Ginny snorted. "It's still bleeding like mad. You think I ought to put something on it?" "What's good to put on it? Mercurochrome any good?" "Iodine's better," Ginny said. Then, feeling her answer was too civil under the circumstances, she added, "Mercurochrome's no good at all for that." "Why not? What's the matter with it?" "Just isn't any good for that stuff, that's all. You need iodine." He looked at Ginny. "It stings a lot, though, doesn't it?" he asked. "Doesn't it sting a hell of a lot?" "It stings," Ginny said, "but it won't kill you or anything." Apparently, without resenting Ginny's tone, Selena's brother turned back to his finger. "I don't like it when it stings," he said. "Nobody does." He nodded in agreement. "Yeah," he said. Ginny watched him for a minute. "Stop touching it," she said suddenly. As though responding to an electric shock, Selena's brother pulled back his uninjured hand. He sat up a trifle straighter, or rather, slumped a trifle less. He looked at some object on the other side of the room. An almost dreamy expression came over his disorderly features. He inserted the nail of his uninjured index finger into the crevice between two front teeth and, removing a food particle, turned to Ginny. "Jeet-jet?" he asked. "What?" "Jeet lunch yet?" Ginny shook her head. "I'll eat when I get home," she said. "My mother always has lunch ready for me when I get home. I got half a chicken sandwich in my room. You want it?" "I didn't touch it or anything." "No, thank you. Really." "You just played tennis, for Christ's sake? Aren't you hungry?" "It isn't that," said Ginny, crossing her legs. "It's just that my mother always has lunch ready when I get home. She goes insane if I'm not hungry, I mean." Selena's brother seemed to accept this explanation. At least he nodded and looked away. But he turned back suddenly. "How about a glass of milk?" he said. "No thanks. Thank you, though." Absently, he bent over and scratched his bare ankle. "What's the name of this guy she's marrying?" he asked. "Joan, you mean?" asked Ginny. "Dick Hefner." Selena's brother went on scratching his ankle. "He's a lieutenant commander in the Navy," Ginny said. "Big deal." Ginny giggled. She watched him scratch his ankle till it was red, when he began to scratch off a minor skin eruption on his calf with his fingernail. She stopped watching. "Where do you know Joan from?" she asked. "I never saw you at the house or anything." "Never been at your goddamn house." Ginny waited, but nothing led away from this statement. "Where'd you meet her then?" she asked. "Party," he said. "At a party? When?" "I don't know. Christmas 42. From his breast pajama pocket, he two-fingered out a cigarette that looked as though it had been slept on. "How about throwing me those matches?" he said. Ginny handed him a box of matches from the table beside her. He lit his cigarette without straightening out its curvature, then replaced the used match in the box. Tilting his head back, he slowly released an enormous quantity of smoke from his mouth and drew it up through his nostrils. He continued to smoke in this French inhale style. Very probably, it was not part of the sofa vaudeville of a show-off, but rather the private, exposed achievement of a young man who, at one time or another, might have tried shaving himself left-handed. "Why's Joan a snob?" Ginny asked.
"Why? Because she is. How the hell do I know why?" "Yes, but, I mean, why do you say she is?"
He turned to her wearily.
"Listen, I wrote her 8 goddamn letters. 8. She didn't answer one of them."
Ginny hesitated. "Well, maybe she was busy."
"Yeah, busy. Busy as a little goddamn beaver."
"Do you have to swear so much?" Ginny asked.
"Goddamn right I do," Ginny giggled.
"How long did you know her, anyway?" she asked.
"Long enough."
"Well, I mean, did you ever phone her up or anything? I mean, didn't you ever phone her up or anything?"
"Nah."
Well, my gosh, if you never phoned her up or any... I couldn't, for Christ's sake. Why not? Said Ginny. Wasn't in New York. Oh? Where were you? Me? Ohio. Oh, were you in college? Nope. Quit. Oh, were you in the army? Nope. With a cigarette hand, Selena's brother tapped the left side of his chest. Ticker, he said. Your heart, you mean? Ginny said. What's the matter with it? I don't know what the hell's the matter with it. I have rheumatic fever when I was a kid. Goddamn pain in the... Well, aren't you supposed to stop smoking? I mean, aren't you supposed to not smoke and all? The doctor told my... Ah, they tell you a lot of stuff, he said. Ginny briefly held her fire. Very briefly. What were you doing in Ohio? She asked. Me? Working in a goddamn airplane factory. You were? Said Ginny. Did you like it? Did you like it? He mimicked. I loved it. I just adore airplanes. They're so cute. Ginny was much too involved now to feel affronted. How long did you work there? In the airplane factory? I don't know, for Christ's sake. 37 months. He stood up and walked over to the window. He looked down at the street, scratching his spine with his thumb. Look at them, he said. Goddamn fools. Who? Said Ginny. I don't know. Anybody? Your finger'll start bleeding more if you hold it down that way, Ginny said. He heard her. He put his left foot up on the window seat and rested his injured hand on the horizontal thigh. He continued to look down at the street. They're all going over to the goddamn draft board, he said. They're gonna fight the Eskimos next, know that?
The who?
Said Ginny. The Eskimos. Open your ears, for Christ's sake. Why the Eskimos? I don't know why. How the hell should I know why? This time all the guys are gonna go. Guys around 60. Nobody can go unless they're around 60, he said. Just give them shorter hours is all. Big deal. You wouldn't have to go anyway, Ginny said, without meaning anything but the truth, yet knowing before the statement was completely out that she was saying the wrong thing. I know, he said quickly, and took his foot down from the window seat. He raised the window slightly and snapped his cigarette streetward. Then he turned, finished at the window. Hey, do me a favor. When this guy comes, will you tell him I'll be ready in a couple seconds? I just gotta go shave is all, okay? Ginny nodded. You want me to hurry Selena up or anything? She know you're here? Oh, she knows I'm here, Ginny said. I'm in no hurry. Thank you. Selena's brother nodded. Then he took a last long look at his injured finger, as if to see whether it was in condition to make the trip back to his room. Why don't you put a Band-Aid on it? Don't you have any Band-Aid or anything? Nah, he said. Well, take it easy. He wandered out of the room. In a few seconds, he was back, bringing the sandwich half. Eat this, he said. It's good. Really, I'm not at all... Take it, for Christ's sake. I didn't poison it or anything. Ginny accepted the sandwich half. Well, thank you very much, he said. It's chicken, he said, standing over her, watching her. Bought it last night at a goddamn delicatessen. It looks very good. Well, eat it then. Ginny took a bite. Good, huh? Ginny swallowed with difficulty. Very, she said. Selena's brother nodded. He looked absently around the room, scratching the pit of his chest. Well, I guess I better get dressed. Jesus, there's the bell. Take it easy now. He was gone.